from WNYC Studios. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Monday, April 29th. This might make you cheer, or it might make you cringe, but on Friday's Howard Stern show, of all places, President Biden seemed to commit for the first time, well, maybe commit is too strong a word, to debate Donald Trump in their election campaign this fall. Here it is. Don't blink or you'll miss it. Howard Stern speaks first.
Can I tell you a fantasy I had? I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. Yeah. I'm happy to debate him.
Happy to debate him. If you didn't catch it, Biden said somewhere. I don't know when, but I'm happy to debate him. Remember, it was Trump who refused to debate any of his Republican opponents in the primaries, right, which are now basically over. And Trump, who pulled out of one of the debates in 2020 against Biden, we'll see if that happens again. But on the record, at least, it's been Trump saying anytime, anywhere, he used those words last week, and Biden more reluctant to commit. And not everyone who supports Biden or democracy thinks it's a good idea. Former George Bush speechwriter David Frum, you know him, an anti-Trump Republican in recent years, wrote an Atlantic magazine article just last week before Biden said this on Howard Stern. Headline, Why Biden Should Not Debate Trump. Subheadline, The networks want their show, but to give the challenger equal status on a TV stage would be a dire normalization of his attempted coup. So let's discuss. Should this year be an exception to the convention of head-to-head presidential debates? And we'll talk about that and more, including something funny and something not so funny from the White House Correspondents' Dinner over the weekend with Susan Page, who was there. Susan, get ready to reveal what got the biggest laugh out of you. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Among many other things, she moderated the Kamala Harris-Mike Pence vice presidential debate in 2020. And I'll just say, any debate moderator these days does so at their own risk. Well, Susan, always good to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be back with you.
I'll ask you about moderating debates like this as we go, but does that count as a commitment by Biden to debate Donald Trump, what Biden said, barely said, on Howard Stern?
Absolutely. That's a commitment. And if he doesn't debate, that means he's breaking that commitment.
Simple enough. and it's a change because a few months ago, Biden said it depends on Trump's behavior. And I think that was a reference to one of the debates in 2020 when Trump wouldn't play by the rules and kept interrupting and shouting over Biden and the moderator, Chris Wallace from Fox News. But Biden couldn't know Trump's debating behavior this year in advance. So should we not take that Biden comment too literally, or maybe now it's just moot?
You know, it is in 100% true that Donald Trump didn't play by the rules of that debate. It was frustrating for Chris Wallace. It was frustrating for Joe Biden. But how did that election turn out after that debate? I mean, Joe Biden won it, right?
Never mind.
You know, debates are a chance for voters to look at the two candidates and to make up their own minds. And they're not necessarily scoring debating points like if you're on a college debating team. They're looking at the two contenders to be president and what they think of them. And I do think, since we've had a consistent situation, we don't know, you know, the Constitution doesn't require anybody to debate, but we've had debates since 1976. And I think I think it would be inappropriate for a candidate from a major party for president to refuse to debate.
What's your best understanding of the Biden campaign's feeling about televised debates this year? Is there a fear of looking old compared to Trump or any other electants?
Yes. You know, there's a fear of gaffes because whether you think it's damaging or endearing, Joe Biden sometimes has verbal gaffes. And also, Donald Trump is unpredictable in these settings and can be pretty aggressive. Remember when he kind of stalked Hillary Clinton around the stage and she didn't seem entirely sure how to handle that? You know, that's a risk with Donald Trump, and that's not the situation that necessarily shows President Biden at his best. So there has been nervousness about debates, and I don't know if we'll have three debates, which is what the Commission on Presidential Debates has called for. That's been pretty much kind of the standard number. But I do think we're going to have one debate, and I think that is a good thing for democracy.
And we should say that Biden's statement came shortly after a consortium of 12 news organizations released a letter urging Biden and Trump to debate because they say it is good for democracy. The 12 included most of the major TV networks, including both Fox and MSNBC, plus NPR and PBS, the Associated Press, and others. I'll read a couple of lines for listeners who haven't heard this.
And also USA Today. And USA Today signed that letter, too. Yes.
There you go. You're on the record. It's your official position. And your group said, if there is one thing Americans can agree on during this polarized time, it is that the stakes of this election are exceptionally high. Amidst that backdrop, there is simply no substitute for the candidates debating with each other and before the American people their visions for the future of our nation, unquote. So we'll get to David Frum's objection and see what callers think. But what about the Trump camp here, behind the scenes, as far as you can tell? Actually eager to debate or also quietly deciding whether to participate? Because we know they complained about some of the rules in 2020 and complained about moderators generally.
Yeah, they complained. They had some complaints. One on the mic turned out to be actually have some legitimacy. And of course, his decision to pull out of a debate eliminated a debate last time that he then decided he wanted to participate in. But this time around,
Can I jump in on that? Was that because, do I remember correctly, he tested positive for COVID but wouldn't do it remotely? They wanted to change it to a remote debate and he insisted that it be in person even though he had COVID. Am I remembering that right?
Well, I don't remember whether he had COVID, but they decided, the Commission on Presidential Debates decided that debate should be held remotely because of COVID.
Because of the threat of COVID generally. Yeah.
Yeah. And Trump said he wouldn't participate, and the commission pretty quickly said, okay, forget it. And I think that Trump then had second thoughts about it, but that was done. Trump has, you may not have noticed this, Brian, but Trump has a lot of self-confidence.
Really?
And so he believes he will eviscerate Joe Biden in a one-on-one confrontation. So yes, I think his campaign also thinks that it will give them a chance to portray Biden as kind of not up to the job for another 4 years. So I've heard of no real reluctance on the Trump camp to having debates.
I will say, to remind our listeners, that debates aren't mandatory. Usually, candidates refusing to debate are the ones with big leads, and they figure, why take the risk? If they're cruising to an election victory, all they could do is come out worse for it if they debate. That's why Trump turned down all the Republican primary debates. Andrew Cuomo famously ducked debates or scheduled them for the last minute when it wouldn't matter. Do you know this story? And listeners, do you? Like, I'm the last person to denigrate radio, right? That would not be in my interest. But in his last reelection in 2018, Cuomo refused and refused to debate his Republican opponent and then finally agreed with only one day's notice, very close to the election, to a radio-only debate at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. So candidates will often duck debates to play it safe. But Biden's reelection is not at all safe right now. So it must be for other reasons, Susan, I guess, right?
Well, to be clear, it's not like the Biden campaign or the White House put out an official statement saying we're eager to debate. It's that Howard Stern asked Joe Biden a question, and he said, yes, I am. And now I think that it is hard. I think it's one thing for a governor or a Senate candidate or for a House candidate or for a mayor to duck debates. But I think it's another thing for presidents to duck debates. And they can put demands. There can be negotiations. It's always possible we'll have an election without a debate. But I think there is now an expectation there will be a debate. And, you know, Brian, just to say it's more important now than it's ever been because there is less necessity now for these candidates to submit to independent questioning in any other forum. Candidates have a million ways to communicate with voters that do not include sitting down for interviews with NPR reporters or USA Today reporters or famously lately New York Times reporters. But a debate is in this time maybe the one chance to see the candidates side by side, forced to answer questions, or at least forced to hear questions. Not they don't always answer them. Forced to hear questions from an independent voice, an independent journalistic voice. So I think it is more imperative now than it's been in the past to have these debates.
Yeah, a lot of our texts, at least, are taking the David Frum position, saying, I agree with Frum, naming him in a number of cases. Somebody else writes, I am okay skipping the TV debates this year. If anyone expects Trump to behave any differently, then they will be sadly disappointed. You know, I'm curious, Susan, if the Biden campaign, and maybe it's moot, like you say, he's committed there with Howard Stern, but have they had any surrogates out there making the David Frum argument that to debate Trump would be to normalize an authoritarian coup plotter? And so, you know, rather than democracy demands a debate, the usual assumption, this time democracy demands no debate.
You know, I understand the point about dire normalization, but think about this. Donald Trump is not some fringe candidate from, you know, a third party making a long shot campaign for the presidency. He is a former president who will be nominated by one of our two major parties, and at the moment is running at least even and sometimes ahead of the incumbent president. So the normalization, I mean, I think we are a little past that point. We're at the point where we're looking at an election where it is entirely possible that Donald Trump will win that. So don't you want to have a chance to see him speak, address questions, stand side by side with his opponent, and let Americans make their own decision?
Do you want to do a little oral history of your own here? You moderated the Kamala Harris-Mike Pence debate in 2020, a tame affair compared to the Biden-Trump main events. But even your debate wasn't without Pence, really, often refusing to stick to the time limit. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was pretty frustrating, and it was maybe I should have expected it. It was very Trumpian of Pence, and Pence is, you know, a very courtly kind of guy. So I was surprised when he just ignored the time limits in my efforts to rein him in. And at one point, I scolded him for not obeying the rules that had been negotiated by his own team. He didn't seem to care about that either. It was frustrating because he had ignored the time limits, and also because he and, to some degree, Kamala Harris, although I think that Pence was more guilty of this, didn't address the question I'd ask. And that was frustrating as well. But, Brian, one thing I tried to think about this before the debate and after the debate is, was it worthwhile for voters who tuned in? And I think it was. I think it gave them a chance to see these two figures, who would be, one of them would be the vice president to somebody who was of an historic age for a president, so therefore with some possibility of becoming president themselves. They got a chance to look at them and see what they thought. So frustrating, yes, but I thought also of some value.
Yeah, listener writes, maybe rather than a debate, they have a physical fitness contest, bike ride, weightlifting, et cetera, et cetera. Another listener writes, the debates need moderators who act like sensible parents. And to that and your experience, I mean, you and Chris Wallace and Jim Lehrer from PBS when he was doing it in previous cycles have all been criticized for not asking pointed follow-up questions when a candidate evades a question, like you just said they were both doing to some degree, or says something that isn't true. On the other hand, CNN's Candy Crowley came under withering attack from the right after she did correct Mitt Romney in a debate against President Obama in the 2012 election cycle. Maybe some of our listeners remember that. Megyn Kelly's whole career changed, I think it's fair to say, after Trump trashed her for asking him a tough question about his treatment of women in a Fox News debate in 2016. Even a Fox News host like Megyn Kelly wasn't immune. Caitlin Collins on CNN, very well respected, got criticized more from the left for her recent Trump town hall, despite her best efforts to combine listening and challenging. So do you think people in the news media even want this job right now?
So I just got to say, grateful I'm still employed. here years later after moderating that debate. Yes, believe me, anyone in journalism would be delighted to be a moderator at a debate because it's an honor and it's a privilege and it's an opportunity to do the best job you can. I was criticized for not asking more follow-up questions. I thought, here was my thinking. You can think I'm right or wrong, but there was a deliberate decision on my part because it wasn't, a debate is not an interview. And an interview with a presidential candidate, you want them to say something new, something spontaneous. You want to catch them. I mean, gotcha is like an excellent question if you're interviewing a presidential candidate. There's an aggressiveness to an interview. A debate is different. A debate is a chance for voters to tune in and assess these two candidates. And that involved, I thought, less gotcha and more give them a chance to talk, ideally within the time limits, and also ask them not about will they change their position by 1 degree on Middle East policy, but rather explain their Middle East policy. Because who's your mm-hmm. audience? Your audience are voters who are going to be making a big decision. So do the things that would be useful to them.
By the way, did Barbara Walters ever moderate a presidential debate?
Yes, she was they did debates a little differently then. They had a moderator and then three journalists posing the questions. And I believe three times she was in one role or the other.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, will get her quick take on the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which she attended Saturday night. Susan, I watched on Saturday night, and I thought there was something generally uncomfortable this year. Colin Jost, who I love and usually is so smooth, seemed a little nervous. The host, I think it was NBC's Kelly O'Donnell, had to make an excuse at the beginning about it's okay to be funny in tough times. I imagine that was a reference to all the troubles in Israel and Gaza, including the killing of many journalists. And there was this whole undercurrent of foreboding for a pre-free press itself if Trump gets elected. You've attended many of these. Did it feel different in the room?
About dark views, Brian. You should have had a glass of wine as you were watching C-SPAN on Saturday night, because we certainly were in the room. You know, actually, I've gone to, I cannot tell you how many of these, and sometimes there's not much serious going on, but often this dinner has been held at a time when we're at war in Iraq, or we felt that we were at the crisis after the crisis of 9/11, or during. I mean, this is a dinner of news people at a time in a town where the news doesn't ever really stop. So no, that I did not think the tone was much was dramatically different from previous ones. It is, you know, we do have this election going on, and Trump has been very critical of the press, called us the enemy of the people. Trump himself, as president, never chose to attend this dinner of the journalists who cover him every day. So that, you know, that certainly those are layers. But I thought it was like most of these dinners in that it was too long. It was pretty cozy, not entirely comfortable with that. It was a little self-congratulatory, but it was also kind of fun.
Here is Colin Jost with one laugh line that reflects, I think, the foreboding about a Trump re-election and a free press.
And I am honored to be here hosting what is, according to swing state polls, the final White House Correspondents' Dinner.
And here's Biden getting a laugh at the expense of the New York Times.
The New York Times issued a statement blasting me for, quote, active and effectively avoiding independent journalists. Hey, if that's what it takes to get the New York Times to say I'm active and effective, I'm for it.
And Susan, he got a good laugh there, but there is apparently some real tension between Biden and the Times. For people who think it's only between the Times and Republicans, can you sum it up in a line or so?
Well, the White House, the President Biden has not given the New York Times an interview as president. That's at odds with previous presidents, and the Times would like to have an interview. That is, there's also, the White House has various complaints about Times coverage that they say is unfair. That is something we hear from most White Houses. You know, I would just note that the Times for many years has refused to attend this dinner and other other press dinners in Washington because they think the coziness is unseemly. So yeah. There was only one or two times people in the room to hear the joke at their expense. But everybody in the room understands that there is some tension there between the Biden White House and the New York Times.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, in her day job is now the author of The Rule Breaker, The Life and Times of Barbara Walters. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.